range. Dave's John.
Indeed, Errol.
He's John Karras.
And he's Errol Bruce Knapp.
And joining us on the phone from his home in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is Neil Freer. Good evening, Neil.
Good evening, Errol. Good evening, John. Good evening, Canada.
Neil, perhaps very briefly, you could tell us how you got interested in the possibility of this planet being visited some almost 500,000 years ago.
Well, probably genetically handicapped to do much else than ask the basic questions, what the hell is going on in this planet? And I've been doing that since I was a kid.
Many of us have.
Yeah, and I went through many different phases. I was born and brought up a Catholic and studied for the priesthood. I was a Trappist novice for quite a while. Came out, married, had 6 kids. Anyway, those are incidental things in a sense, but always looking for answers, and became interested enough so that I pursued a philosophy degree on the graduate level and taught that. And to make a long story short, by 1976, I happened on the work of Zechariah Sitchin, a gentleman, Sumerian scholar, one of 200 in the world that can read a clay tablet like you and I can read the newspaper, when I was living in New York State. And I realized at that point that I thought that he had literally put the last pieces of the puzzle in place. But I spent about 7 or 8 years between 1976 and the time that I eventually published Breaking the God Spell in 1987, trying to break his case, and I realized that I pretty much couldn't. So the background on Sitchin is simply that he says that when you, with an open mind, if you go back and look at all the archaeological information that we've acquired basically over the last 150 years, but since the time that Schliemann, the German merchant who wouldn't accept the fact that the general consensus was that everything previous to the time of the Old Testament and beyond was mythological history, he went down and dug up Troy and, of course, broke the case open. We had no archaeology up until that point, literally because the Judeo-Christian context of Western culture mitigated against it totally. So when he broke the case open, eventually it became a respected science and our archaeologists became. So Sitchin is saying that over the last 150 years, if we look at that archaeological information, perhaps 2 million pieces of a historical document, artifact, sculpture, the works that are in the libraries and museums now, that we have to discard the mythological explanation as myth information, as somebody said a little while ago, simply because all of the reasons that we gave ourselves, first of all, that it was mythological, like the gods were supposed to have been able to fly through space and fly through the atmosphere and invent human beings. They were supposed to use weapons like Star Wars lasers and atomic bombs. And actually, you know, since over the last 40 years, we've been able to do all those things. So we've had to discard that. But even more so, we have the information, and we see that the early civilizations, those sudden civilizations like Sumeria, popped up practically out of nowhere with trilingual dictionaries and colleges and the works, everything that we have just about in modern civilization as far as institutions are concerned. He says we have to go back and say that those so-called gods were not mythological beings. They were not the product of the naive human imagination projecting human characteristics on the forces of nature, like the sun and the moon and thunder and lightning and so on, as mythology holds, and that they were real flesh and blood humanoids who came here from the 10th planet in our solar system, who about 432,000 years ago colonized the planet, were here for gold, not for jewelry or wealth, but a scientific endeavor to seed the planet's atmosphere, of their planet's atmosphere, with microscopic gold particles.
Neil, picking up from where you were talking about just before the break, what is it that Sitchin discovered in his studies that leads him to the conclusions he's come to about the relationship between these folks from 432,000 years ago who visited here and us, this relationship of our being their creation, etc.? What is that based on?
It is based on the documentary information, human produced or copied or written down, that we learned from the Anunnaki. That word in Sumerian means those who came down from the heavens, and they considered them, there is no word for God, by the way, in Sumerian, either with a capital G or a small g. They call them master or lord or whatever, recognition of their superior advanced culture and science. But the critical factor is here that once they had settled the planet 432,000 years ago, they were here for gold, and they were working gold mines in South Africa. The gold mining community in South Africa now, the gold mining engineers, don't go looking for gold much with a pick anymore. They simply go looking for the ancient gold mines, and the earliest date that I've heard so far is that they have found gold mines with traces of human work in them 100,000 years old.
Really?
Yes. So what we're looking at is the documentation that was eventually taught to us in crash courses in civilization. I'm getting a little ahead of myself. But that says that about 200,000 years ago, they literally had a rebellion on the part of their gold mining lower echelons, the Anunnaki did, in South Africa. And they decided to solve the problem, because they didn't want to eat the dirt in the gold mines anymore, to solve the problem by creating a creature to take their place. And so they put their chief medical officer and geneticist to work on the problem. And Ninhursag is her name, and Enki was her partner, Enki, their chief scientist. And they went to work genetically. And first they tried to cross Homo erectus genes with animal genes. Literally humans, as we know ourselves, were not around. That's a key thing to know. And they got a creature, or creatures, that show up on the old cylinder seals, those hard rolling pin-type devices with reverse-incised text and images on them that you roll across a wet clay tablet to print it. Mm-hmm. They show creatures that look like centaurs and all kinds of weird stuff, and we always thought they were mythological, but it's quite possible that they were a record of what they got when they originally tried it. But it didn't work. They got creatures that lived but didn't work by the genetic engineering. So what they did is eventually cross their genes, Anunnaki genes, with Homo erectus genes, and if this is all true, and I think it is, that's literally how we got here. And what is fascinating, just as sort of incidental reinforcement to this, is that the mitochondrial DNA search for Eve that we were made aware of back in 88, I believe, where they took samples of mitochondrial DNA from women all over the world, looking for the greatest number of mutations, assuming that that would be the oldest DNA in the world, mm-hmm. Mitochondrial. When you put your finger on the map in East Central Africa, where the mitochondrial DNA says the first human woman came from, you're putting your finger right on the same spot on the East Central Africa map where the ancient records say the Anunnaki laboratory was, right above their gold mines. And in addition to that, we were created as slave animals, basically, and we had very little rights, but eventually we became a pretty stable species. And we also became probably more precocious than they could anticipate. It might have been the first time they ever created a new species. As a result, to make a very long story short, after the flood, where they tried to literally wipe us out.
You mean you're saying the Anunnaki created the flood?
Well, some people think that they had sufficient technological capabilities to do that. Sitchin does not say that. And I think I tend to agree more with Sitchin in this case. Let me go back a step.
Okay.
One of the critical things here, and this will pertain to the rest of our discussion this evening because of the scientific announcements that have been made recently, they came, according to all the ancient documents, very, very clearly, from a 10th planet in our solar system, a large planet that's Uranus-sized, they taught us, has a huge elliptical orbit. Sitchin is saying that it clearly is 3,600 years once around our sun. And there is a critical document that was unearthed in Nineveh from Ashurbanipal's library called the Enuma Elish. And it is, quite obviously, a completely detailed history of the formation of our entire solar system. Now, of course, the scientists don't want to look at this, or up until this point at least, they haven't wanted to look at this because the astronomers are always looking over their shoulder at all the other academia. The mythologists are saying this is all mythological. The astronomers aren't, you know, they're loath to even consider it as a source of information. But the fact of the matter is that Harrington of the Naval Observatory, once he had read Sitchin's translation of this, giving the history of the solar system and the fact that this 10th planet was not an indigenous planet. It was captured in early in the proto-solar system, probably gravitationally. Napier and Clude, the astronomers from Edinburgh Astronomy Complex over there give very excellent reasons how that can happen in a book called The Cosmic Serpent. When it was captured in, it eventually, through the huge gravitational pull and push between that and our larger planets, the Earth was not in orbit by this time. There was a major planet in orbit in between Mars and Jupiter, where the asteroid belt is now, and the asteroid belt was not there. And it collided with that large planet called Tiamat in the asteroid belt area. And as a result, the asteroid belt was formed from the debris, this ancient document says, and the intruder planet called Nibiru, N-I-B-I-R-U, Marduk in the Babylonian, Nibiru in the Sumerian, went into this 3,600-year orbit, and once every 3,600 years, it comes back in through the asteroid belt area.
Neil, you were just talking a moment ago before the break on Strange Days Indeed about all of these various events that took place over almost half a million years ago, and it's just fascinating to me to hear how, you know, with such calm, confident certitude and casualness about these events, as if they really are our history. The question, I guess, I just really want to get answered here is, how feasible is it that this really could be our history?
That's one of the basic questions that was just mind-boggling to me when I began to encounter this material. Another related, very related question is if this planet, if it is true that this is the home planet of the Anunnaki, and we are half Anunnaki, and they were, by all the records and the carvings and everything, very much like us, and even though they evolved on that particular planet, how could they exist out there if this planet goes in a huge elliptical orbit way out past Pluto? Well, the fact of the matter is that I think that there is enough information, first of all, with regard to their being able to live there, because it is constantly attributed the characteristics of being a very radiant planet. It's very possible that it has a very high core temperature. Maybe it has the same mechanism going that we are trying to decipher in one of our large planets. It slips me whether it's Neptune or Saturn, where it is much warmer on that planet than it was predicted to be. Also, there is some very controversial astrophysics that say that if a planet is in a huge elliptical orbit, a large body like that, it's tending always towards a circular orbit, and the internal stresses that are caused could cause it to be warm enough. It satisfies me sufficiently, but basically it is the coherence of the entire thesis which explains stuff that we could not explain in any other way, is not explained in any other way, and puts all of the bits and pieces together for the entire picture that ultimately convinces me.
Neil, we've been talking about this possibility and all of the evidence pointing to a 10th planet on a 3,600-year orbit around the Sun, which means from time to time it would be passing through our neighborhood. Any indications of when the next pass by our area will be for this mysterious planet?
If I do the numbers, according to the data that I see, I get something like 3,400 AD, which means that it was through here around 200 AD. So because it was not reported, or I don't know of any source either in China or the Middle East or wherever,
they would keep the records, yes.
Yeah, that there was a notable body of that type. It is described in the ancient records as a very bright star-like object when it comes through in the inner solar system. It does come through fairly rapidly, apparently. The Numa Elish document even gives where to look, so to speak, when it's on its way in and has become visible. It tells which constellations it passes through. It says, interestingly enough, that it is, and this is significant with regard to the current data on a 10th planet in our solar system, where we can talk about in a little bit, it's settled into an orbit which is counter to the orbital direction of all the other planets. And in its passage, it goes in through the inner solar system. Now that means it's going to come pretty close to Earth, and there are described in the ancient records perturbations of the Earth, storms and
earthquakes
and that type of thing.
A time of major change.
A time of major change as far as the geological conditions are concerned. Perhaps even we are looking at, now I have to qualify this with the caveat that it's purely speculative on my part as an amateur. I'm not an astronomer. But it seems that it might be, besides the impact theories that we see prevalent in the scientific literature now, it might be the cause of pole reversals and magnetic pole wandering also.
Well, it's interesting to note that, I mean, we're thinking here at a 3,600-year cycle. We're in a time right now, as we enter the new millennium, of everyone expecting some major change to happen. There's all kinds of literature from all kinds of cultures on this planet talking about this being a time of major change, the end of the world as we know it, for instance.
Absolutely, yeah.
And if we think from this time back 3,600 years, we think, well, gosh, that's all of our recorded history or visible history that we have. We don't have much history that we know of before 3,600 years ago.
Right.
Could it be possible that it passed by here 3,600 years ago, created a pole reversal possibly, or a whole new world that we now have been living in and are possibly coming to the end of,
mm-hmm.
because it's due here soon?
It's possible. I have to back off in the speculation because there are some people who have analyzed the data that Sitchin has put out and said it looks to them as if it might be just happening the way you're talking about it. If you go back, for instance, to the date in 3000-something B.C., which is the beginning of the Jewish calendar, for instance,
mm-hmm.
and come forward. And Sitchin is very loath to speculate because I think he doesn't feel that he has sufficient data. He does think that it was the cause of the flood. And I just realized that I had not answered your question completely before. This planet coming in somewhere close to 10,500 B.C., which is one of the dates that was very significant to me, apparently was, obviously being their home planet, was known to the Anunnaki. They even had an observatory at the southern tip of South Africa, as best we can tell. And knowing it was coming in, they also realized that it was going to cause the kind of perturbations that we are appraised of in those ancient records. They knew that it was going to be a tremendous flooding event. And at that particular point in our history and their history, they had realized that they had created sort of a nuisance for themselves because we had proliferated so much. And the most significant event that happened at that particular point was they realized that their younger male Anunnaki were becoming very enamored of the new human females. And that's where the sixth chapter of Genesis comes in, where it says before the flood and after the flood, the Nephilim, they were called the Nephilim in Genesis in some cases instead of the Anunnaki, or Anakim, which is the Hebrew form of the Sumerian Anunnaki. The Nephilim were on the earth, and the sons of those gods became enamored of the daughters of men, took on themselves wives, as many as they wanted, had children with them. The High Council basically decided that they were really going to pollute the Anunnaki race, and so they decided that they would, or some of them decided that they were just going to let everything go down the tubes, quite frankly, when this flooding event took place. There is even described them taking off in their space vehicles. By the way, they were not flying saucer-type vehicles. They were only up to the point in their technological development, apparently, where they used ballistic technology rockets, and they had to launch from their home planet, sometimes land on Mars, come here to Earth, and then pick a window to go back out and to pick up the orbit of their planet.
So much in the same way that we launched today.
Precisely, precisely.
We're talking with the author of Breaking the God Spell and God Games, Neil Freer. Neil, I know we're just not going to get through it all tonight.
Yeah, right.
Your website has some of this information on it and links to various
great
other
deal,
places
yes.
that would interest our listeners.
Neil, picking up on something you were just mentioning a moment ago, I'm finding it hard to believe that the Anunnaki would be traveling from their planet, Nibiru, to here on Earth that they were cultivating us on by conventional ballistic rocket means. How could they cover the vast distances involved without dealing with the time problem, you know, the difficulties of covering that distance in their lifetimes?
Well, I think that if you look at the times required to go to Mars or go to the distant planets, I think it is at least obviously feasible because we're talking about distances within
7 years to Mars,
our solar system. Yeah.
Yeah, but like Jupiter's like 100 or something, isn't it?
I don't think so, because our spacecraft have gone out past the solar system, and they only started, 20 years ago?
Yeah,
that's true,
in
yeah.
70s,
uh-huh.
yeah.
Thanks for reminding us, yeah.
One of the critical factors here that we're looking at is the fact that Sitchin's thesis, as comprehensive as it is, saying that we're a genetically engineered species, and I'm saying that this resolves the evolutionist creationist conflict here because both of them are partially right. There was a creation, but it was a genetic engineering event in a laboratory. There is an evolutionary process, but it was interrupted, and that's why we do not meet the criteria that normally we see a species going through. Homo erectus took a million years to go from rough flake stone tools to smooth ones, and we're going from zero scratch 250,000 years ago or 200,000 years ago to Mars with the Russians or whomever can afford to go with us in a short time. In my books, just one sentence, I have accepted Sitchin's core thesis. I don't agree with him on some of the details when he gets into some of the later stuff, but I think he should get a Nobel Prize for his core thesis. And my books work out the ramifications of that. Breaking the Godspell says we need to get out from underneath the subservient master-slave relationship, which we have transmuted up into institutionalized religions. And transcendental experience is really participation at this rapid leading edge of our evolutionary development. God Games says take it a little bit farther. Once you get genetically enlightened like that, what do you do forever? Because we're going to be mortal very shortly. If by choice, anyway, we will have the option genetically.
To become immortal, you mean?
Pardon?
To become immortal, you mean?
To become immortal.
Right.
And to play our own God games and become our own evolutionary artist.
And then we'll go ballistic around other places and do the same thing.
That's a very bad pun.
Because that's the only way we know how so far.
So far. Well, unless it is true, and it's a totally different subject, but it is true that we have alien technology here from extra solar system aliens. You know, Michael Lindemann and the rest of them are you know, focused on that. But the critical thing is that within the last week, or a week and a half, on the 7th, there was an announcement, and this addresses the fact that Sitchin's thesis rises or falls on whether that 10th planet is there. On the 7th, there was an announcement by Dr. Murray of the Open University that by analyzing the orbit and characteristics of 13 comets in the Oort cloud, that fringe of junk out there that they postulate at the edge of our solar system, as much as he didn't want to face the data, it says that there is a large body out there. He thinks it is not only a planet, is it a 50-50 chance maybe or more, but it is probably an intruder planet, which is, again, right in line with what the ancient documents are telling us. There was a conference this week with Dr. Murray and Dr. Matisse from Louisiana, who has analyzed 82 comets and come to the exact same conclusions, basically. They held a conference in Padua, Italy, and we should be looking for new and further announcements from them. So here again, just as with the IRIS satellite, the infrared imaging satellite that was up in 83, 84, where they made announcements, the crew that was analyzing the data, they said, well, we've got a planet in our solar system. And they said, well, no, it might be a comet, or no, it might be a young forming galaxy. And I said to myself at that particular point in 83, 84, hey, guys, if you can't tell the difference between a planet and a forming galaxy way, way off in space, what's happening here? With that one, by 83, there was one of the astronomers said in, I think it was the January 30th issue of New York Times, Ray, somebody from Ames Laboratory, he said, as part of the team, we're so sure that it's a planet and that it's out there that all we have to do is name it. And then the curtains have come down. It's very difficult to get any kind of detailed data on the analysis of that thing. And in addition to that, Harrington, who called Sitchin in, he was the head of the Naval Observatory back then, he called Sitchin in. They had a big conference, and he pretty much confirmed everything that Sitchin was saying from the data that he had from the Pioneer spacecraft and from the IRIS satellite.
1990s science confirms Sumerian scrolls. Interesting.
This idea of an intruder planet, is this a good thing or a bad thing to have this idea, intruder? Intruder sounds bad.
It's neutral, I guess. You've got to live with it.
Right. But the fact is, if it's on this ellipsis for 3,600 years around the sun, when it comes in this elliptical orbit into our solar system, because of its size, it really rocks the boat.
I'm sorry, into the interior solar system, because it always is in the solar system.
Right, but within, say, the confines of the planets that we know in the inner sanctum of the solar system here, especially the area where we are that we call home, the boat really gets rocked because of the gravitational effect of this large body.
So the ancient records say, and that's one of the reasons why I think that it is very, very important for the, and I sent notices to all the astronomers and to all the media, as arrogant as that seems, saying, please, guys, recognize that 25 years ago, Sitchin put all this information out about a 10th planet. It would be at least worth looking at it because it may save you a lot of time, because if we don't do a computer analysis and a computer modeling of its orbit and figure out what it could do if it came in, for instance, and just passed, instead of between Mars and Jupiter, passed between Mars and Earth. That is totally conceivable, at least in my amateur evaluation of the situation. So I think that we need to get on this. The major block to Sitchin's thesis is not scientific. It is the ancient religious inquisitional attitude that put Galileo under house arrest and burnt Giordano Bruno at the stake for saying that there were other planets and other civilizations probably out there about 16 years before Harvard University was founded. I think that we need to get on with this. I highly recommend Sitchin's work. We've only obviously been able to skim the surface here. I recommend that people follow carefully and question and encourage the astronomers who are working on this. I also would recommend that people begin to look at the ramifications of this, because the critical factor here is that if that planet is determined to be there, and I think they got it with the IRIS, and quite frankly, I think some of the information has been, I was going to say, suppressed. I don't want to talk conspiracy or any of that nonsense, but there are some people out there who would patronize the human race at this particular point and suppress information just like they do about flying saucers and alien presence here, because they think that there might be chaos or panic, or maybe their position would be threatened. Mm. I don't want to make those allegations, but sometimes I think it's necessary to at least consider them.
Mm-hmm.
Because if that planet's there, then it could well be the home planet of the Anunnaki, and we are about to completely rethink planet Earth.
And who knows, in the very near future, we may run into those self-same Anunnaki again.
Uh-huh. And one of the points that I make over and over again in both Breaking the Godspell and God Games is we should not maintain the Godspell attitude of subservience. When they come here, let them show us their credentials, let them state their intent, let them treat us as a mature species who are ready to take responsibility for our own destiny. Because if we don't get a redefinition of what a human being is, a concept of a generic human being, regardless of what the various sects and religions would define us as,
Neil, thank you very much indeed for being with us.
A pleasure.
Good night, Neil. Thanks a lot.